Good afternoon. The Legislative Study Group on Educator Licensure will come to order. We have several items on the agenda, and our first item is approval of minutes. We don't quite have a quorum yet, so we're going to go to presentations. We're going to ask for each of the groups to go about 20 minutes or less, and then we will open it up for questions after we've heard from the four different groupings of presentations. Our first presentation will be from the Department of Education, and we'll ask the Deputy Commissioner or however you'd like to introduce it.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Wei Nguyen. I'm an assistant commissioner at the Department of Education. I have with me here Mr. Nels Onset, our director of educator licensing, and Mr. Adosh Uni, who is our government relations director. I don't think we're going to take the 20 minutes allotted to us. I think we are just going to provide an overview of what the Department of Education does, and then we can just leave the rest of the time for questions if you guys have questions of us. And then we will also be around for if you have questions later on in the hearing. So I just wanted to start off with just a simple, what does the Department of Education Educator Licensing Division do? So as you can see on the PowerPoint, they oversee the day-to-day licensing and licensure compliance of all educators and administrators in Minnesota public schools, so school districts and charter schools. And I do want to emphasize administrators. I think there has been a lot of discussion about the Board of Teaching and teacher licenses. We also do process licenses for the administrators, too, in our education system. We also, the division, outside of licensing, they do a series of other state and federal requirements. They are currently right now helping with the Every Student Succeeds Act plan and implementation, providing guidance to districts, working across our state agency to make sure that we all know what the requirements are, and then other state requirements as well, such as the teacher supply and demand report, fiscal notes, budget, narratives, and requests. So, and then I just wanted to provide just a high-level overview, and we can provide more data if you would like it, of just kind of what our licensing staff does. So, about annually, on average, we issue about 32,000 licenses per year. 11,000 are initial licenses, and then 21,000 are renewals. And then those are just standard licenses, correct?
Correct.
And then in addition to the standard licenses, we also issue variances, non-licensed community experts, limited licenses, and non-renewables. So those numbers are also up top. And I'm sorry, it's just really hot. And I think there has just been a lot of discussion as well about the capacity of the Department of Education and our Educator Licensing Division and the work that we do. So the next few slides will really kind of outline the staffing that we have in this division and kind of the scope of work that they do. This is by no means comprehensive, but it will give you an idea of what the staff does on a day-to-day basis. And I'm not going to read through everything, but just to kind of let you guys know. So we do have three customer service personnel who answer about 30,000 phone calls a year. We also get a lot of walk-in customers, about 1,700. I will say that our Educator Licensing Division is probably the most public-facing division in our agency with interactions with the public. A lot of our divisions really work with school districts, school district personnel, principals, teachers, and Educator Licensing really would, I would say, have most interaction with the public. Our customer service personnel also answer about 15,000 emails from, teachers, principals, superintendents, the general public, probably me if you want to add that in there, legislators. So that's kind of the scope of what our three customer service personnel do. And then next, we It says we have two general education licensing staff. We do have other licensing staff, but these are the ones that kind of just do those standard general education licenses. So, they process all the in-state and out-of-state general education licenses. They help with the training of teachers, and they go to conferences. They go to, the state fair. They go to other areas in which we hold public conferences and stuff like that. And again, in addition to teacher licenses, they also administrate all of the administrative licenses. Okay. And then we do have a renewal specialist. So we have one individual that processes all of the 21,000 renewals that we had indicated that we process a year. In addition to the renewal of the licenses, they also work with the local school districts because they're the ones that are really approving those continuing education requirements. So really working with them to make sure that we have all the up-to-date information on those committees and making sure that they understand what all of the requirements are. We have also recently, I would say about a year ago, after passage of last year's legislation, we did hire a person to focus on the licensure via portfolio process. In addition to the portfolio process, this person also assists with processing special education licenses and working with state agencies have requirements for accessibility of documents, so really working with our website and doing all of the accessibility stuff that we have. And then we also have one specialist that processes the special education licenses. I'm sure Mr. Onstead could speak more to it, but there's more that goes into special education licenses, I would say particular with out-of-state licenses.
Not only that, but the specific requirements around other things like speech-language pathologists and so on, it's not just like the EBD licensures, but the types of licenses that we get from out-of-state in particular are do not match the Minnesota licenses necessarily all the time, and so it takes a little bit more time and knowledge of the special education world to be able to apply statute and rule appropriately.
And I will say there are also other requirements in federal law, too, that special education teachers must meet in order to get federal funds for special education teachers, so really working with our special education policy staff and program staff in our agency to really make sure that we are following all of the federal requirements as well. And then we also have a compliance and data manager. I think some of you are familiar with our STAR system, which is the staff reporting system that school districts have to report into us. And the STAR system really does generate a lot of compliance for the federal requirements, as well as some of the state funding streams use the STAR system. For example, I think QCOMP does. The new legislation that was passed to provide professional development dollars for intermediate districts also use the data that's that comes out of STARS, as well as other programs and funding streams as well. This person also works on our website, works on accessibility, and as you may be aware, we get a lot of data requests, and this person also processes the data requests for the licensing division. And I think you guys have met, or she has been in the audience. We have one licensing supervisor who oversees our customer service staff, as well as our licensing staff. In addition to that, she also, as you can see, these are other duties that she has as well. We are required by state and federal law to do background checks on all initial licenses. And so she really leads the work in the fingerprint processing, working with the BCA, working with actually the FBI as well, because we do get audited in our processes. Really implementation, policy, she was really key in our work with working with the OLA and the report. She works on, there has been new law about expungements of records for criminal records. And again, she also works on fiscal notes and budget narratives and some of the other legislative process stuff. And then finally, we have a director of educator licenses, which, again, in addition to day-to-day management, Mr. Onstead has actually spent a lot of time with the portfolio process and implementing that new process, budget management, the legislative process, fiscal notes, budget narratives, and then coming to the Capitol. In addition to that, Mr. Onstad also does a lot of the federal and the other state requirements, like, as I had mentioned, the teacher supply and demand report, the federal teacher shortage report.
No, I think many of the other agency tasks that the commissioner would have me or the director be part of the ESSA planning team, mm-hmm. and then representing the department, at least the licensing division, at events. And they see a list of people that are listed below, and it certainly isn't inclusive of all of the groups that have a stakeholder groups in general.
And then this slide just kind of, it'll list the different licenses that are issued and the licenses that are issued by MDE and the licenses that are issued by the Board of Teaching. And then we just wanted to also walk the committee through just as simply as we can the actual process itself. I know that especially there, you know, it's not just a straight line. There are other steps along the way, but as and I think the OLA report does a really good job of actually laying that out in a graphic in the report of, you know, if we need more information, then other things happen, or if it denies, then kind of what happens then. But we kind of laid out here the most simple process. So, you know, an applicant applies for a license, and we now have moved to an entirely online system. We do know that the OLA report did say that our online system is outdated. Unfortunately, we just went online a couple of years ago, and now we've been told that it's already outdated. So we are working to try to update that to the best of our ability. And as part of what they submit in their applications are their transcripts, the recommendations from their teacher preparation program, the fingerprint, because we do have to run a background check, and then proof that they've passed all the testing requirements. And then once received from the applicant to the department, then the licensing specialist will do the transcript audit and go through their application and review things. And it really is, it generally is a back and forth process. Our licensing specialist oftentimes will ask for more information from the applicant, either via email or phone call. And so, and then once all that is done and taken care of, then the license is issued. It typically takes about 4 weeks for a teacher license to be processed and issued from the time that we receive them. And what I will say is sometimes it's a little bit longer and sometimes it's a little bit shorter. It kind of depends on the time of year. We have many individuals graduating right now and applying for a license to become teachers this fall. So really in the summertime, it's a big crunch time for us. And then I would say also in December and early January, as we have the winter graduates as well trying to get their license so that they can enter the classroom after the winter break. And then I know there's been a lot of interest in the portfolio process as well, so we just wanted to lay out to you, because the portfolio process is different than the standard license process, what the process for portfolios are. So currently the process is that we ask applicants to submit an intent to submit form to the agency, and this serves a couple of different purposes. Because we do hire outside reviewers for these portfolios, it gives us time to find the reviewers and hire them and make sure that they have the time to review the portfolios. It also gives us an opportunity to look at the initial information that they submit to us and inform them. And in some cases, we have that they don't have to go through the portfolio process. Because of recent changes in law, they actually could just go through the regular licensing process and get a license that way. So it serves a couple of different purposes. And then once we do get an intent to submit form back from the individual, we will then send them back the information, instructions as to how they're going to what they need to fill out. And then we receive the portfolios back from the applicant. And that's when we, when that 90-day window starts. So we get the completed application and the fee for the process. And then we hire an external reviewer to review, and then the reviewer then provides back to the Department of Education and to the Board of Teaching a recommendation of whether or not this individual should be recommended for a license. We then inform the candidate of whether or not they have been recommended or not. If not, then the Board of Teaching by statute must inform the candidate what is, I would say, deficient and what they would need to resubmit. By no means is this at the point where they actually would get their license, because we also inform them that there are other steps. They may still have to pass all the tests, or there may be some other steps that they have to take, and we inform them of that. And then after all of those steps are completed, then they would be issued a teacher license. That was what we had prepared for you today. I'm sure you have a lot of questions, or if you have questions, we can always come back.
Yes, thank you, Assistant Commissioner Witt. And we want to maybe a few minutes for questions right now, but 20 minutes for each of the initial presentations. And if there's time, we'll do some questions. Then we want to open it up more later. But Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your thorough presentation. This is very good, and I appreciate the time and effort you put into making it so specific. My question is on slide 3, for the 32,000 licenses issued per year, what time element is needed to do the initial licenses versus the renewals? Because I would hope the renewals come in pretty tightly put together, in that those who are in charge at the local district should have ensured that every candidate seeking, or every teacher, I should say, seeking renewal has his or her ducks in a row. So how does that time frame?
You're accurate. The only difference in regard to the time frame is when the renewals can start in January 1, and so the queue, of course, builds exponentially at that time. So as renewals come in, they really come in January through this time of the year now, and so the only thing that holds up that lengthens the time to process renewals is just the sheer number that come in all at one time. But it is a much shorter process to do a renewal than it would be to do an initial license.
Thank you, Mr. Anstead. Question about the initial license. To what extent do you know how the preparation programs help their candidates prepare for the initial licensing, making sure that they understand the process, what is required, and whether they've met the timelines to take the tests, et cetera? Do you know to what extent the prep programs, the school from which the candidate comes, are helping them prepare?
Senator Wieger and Representative Erickson, I would say that there is a varying level of how the teacher preparation programs enable their candidates, their completers. Some of them have had veteran certifying officers that are very good at getting the ducks in a row, so to speak. There are workshops for completers to go through to, you know, the Board of Teaching, obviously, I think, would be able to speak better to this, but I'm just aware, just because I happen to be aware of some of these that go through a process where, you have your check, you have your transcripts, you have this, you have this, and you have this, just to make sure that they have their ducks in a row, and then they are shipped to us. There are others with newer staff that it takes a bit of time to develop that process, and that's a learning process for those certifying officers, as my understanding is, and you would certainly need to clarify with others, that there may be a fairly high turnover of certifying officers and people inside of the Higher Education and Teacher Preparation Institutes as well.
Mr. Chair, one last question.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To any one of the three of you, but probably Mr. Anstead, on slide 13, it's come to my attention that even though you have this two-year-old website and the reports indicates that it's outdated, that there's still redundancy going on. What you require that's done online also requires a card to be sent back. and it may be in regard to candidates coming from other states, I'm not sure, but that's what I've heard from those seeking licensure, that there seem to be redundancies. If they have gone through the process in other states, Minnesota seems to require extra steps that if the online process is in place and working, shouldn't be required. And that elongates the time for receiving the license. Can you speak to that, or is this blown out of proportion? I mean, I don't know. I haven't heard from, you know, hundreds, but I've heard from many about the redundancy.
Senator Wieger, Representative Erickson, I don't know that I could do anything other than estimate, and I think I'll try a little bit with that because I don't want to be evasive about it. I think maybe 2 years ago with things before July of 2015, I think there were certainly more types of processes. And again, this is before my time. But I do know that the process was more arduous at that point. Whereas when I look at the type of out-of-state applicant, a typical one, they're not all typical, right? But the most straightforward, they don't take a terrible amount of time. I don't see many of those getting held up because when we think about applying what the statute says now with regard to program completion and a license in another state, along with student teaching methods or, you know, the whole thing that you've heard many, many times, those really quite honestly are evaluated quite quickly. So to be able to speak to exactly the things that you've heard about, I don't know that I see those right now, and I'm not hearing them, but that doesn't mean that they don't exist.
And Representative Erickson and Mr. Chair, I think also, although the online system is relatively new, it's built on an older system, and as I think you guys have all heard us say, our systems at MDE are decades old. I would venture to say probably some of them are older than I am. And so what we have been doing is we've been building on top of really outdated technology. And so some of those things that you would think that should just be really easy, like why can't I just download something or why can't I electronically submit some things, it's unfortunately because of the technology that we have at MDE, we're not able to have some of those things in place. When the OLA report did come out last year, we did ask Minute what would it cost for us to update our system, and they said it doesn't make sense just to update what it is. You need a new platform. And I'm not an IT person, so I don't know if it's the right word, but you just need a new platform. And it would cost almost $2 million to build this out.
Mr. Chair, just one final comment.
Excuse me, Representative Erickson, we need to get to the next presentation.
I just wanted to say, you know, our candidates are so tech savvy that that's what's the frustration, I think, is they're so far ahead of where we are. So
yes.
Thank you.
No, agreed. Thank you.
We will get back, but we have several other presentations and then dive deeper into this.
Members, we have a quorum present, and I'll entertain a motion to approve the June 28 minutes. Moved by Senator Pratt. Discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Carried. Next, the Board of School Administrators. We have four persons listed. If you could all approach, add another chair. And we do have your handout. And welcome.
Thank you.
And for each of you, and we've seen, I think, each of you before four. Committee before, identify your name for the record when you talk or in follow-up questions. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Mary McBee. Currently, I serve as chair of the State Board of School Administrators. My current job is principal at St. Paul Central High School in St. Paul, Minnesota. You want to introduce yourselves first? Okay. What I plan to do this morning is just to give you some background information about the board in case some of you are not aware of the historical significance of it. The board was established as an autonomous body created by you, the legislature at that time, in 2001, with the support of the educational administrative organizations, including MASSP, MESPA, MASA, and other educational organizations. The initial board consisted of 9 members. I happen to be one of the original members. I've been on the board for 15 years now. and they represent one elementary school principal, one secondary school principal, one higher public education representative, one higher education private rep approved by the board. We also have one teacher, one school superintendent, Dr. Deb Henton, one classroom teacher, I think I mentioned that, one special education director, and two members of the public, one of whom has to be a current serving board member. The 10th member was added in 2003 by the legislature to represent directors of community education, which we found was an omission in terms of a licensure issue on our board. The purpose of the board initially was twofold. One, to establish and maintain high standards for a quality education or licensing system for public schools, and also and to ensure that we have the highest quality administrators serving the students in our state. We have kind of like seven specific duties. One, working with the Minnesota Department of Ed, licensing the Minnesota school administrators, and including also requests for licensure variances for these for the administrative categories. We also review and approve preparation programs for school administrators and also alternative programs for administrators. We process requests for clock hours for administrators who need to renew their license. We also enforce and advise school administrators in the code of ethics. So we do deal with code of ethical violations by administrators across the state. We also are required sometimes to do rulemaking, and we also have been allowed by you in recent years to assess an annual fee to help support our ongoing needs. And we also are required to give you an accountability report every 2 years. We oversee four licensure areas, K-12 principals, and that includes assistant principals, superintendent, director of community education, and also director of special education. And currently we have over 7,000 licensed school administrators in the state. So for our area, we are not, we do not represent a shortage of administrators. In fact, I think at the school where I serve, there are approximately seven teachers who are currently classroom teachers who also hold administrative licenses but do not serve as administrators. So we have plenty of those in the state. We also monitor compliance of administrative licensure standards. Our goal is to improve continuously licensure programs throughout the state. We also have been, over the years, working on improving our communication with our stakeholders. We're primarily a new board, even though we're 15 years old. It's fairly a new board in terms of our members, and so we constantly are seeking ways to communicate our purpose and our goals to our membership so that they understand our role as it relates to their duties and responsibilities in their professions. We operate with four committees that take care of our work, and right now the MDE provides support to us, such as technology assistance, financial reporting and processing, human resources. We have to go through them if we are going to replace either one of our two staff members, and also facility maintenance and report. We rent office space from MDE within the MDE building, and as I said, we have two employees, one executive director and a full-time secretary. And we try to work very collaboratively with MDE and the Educator Licensing Department in order to provide information and provide licensure. And as you can see, our annual budget is $231,000. So we're not a rich organization. That's some background information about the history. I've been the chair for the 15 years that the board has been in operation, and I continue to serve well. I don't know how... It's a long time in some ways that I can't retire from my principal's position. That's beside the point. I'm not ready to retire. But if you have any questions about the historical significance and history of the organization, I can provide that. Otherwise, I'll turn it over to Louise Sundin, who will talk about our governance structure.
Please proceed. Okay.
Thank you. Good afternoon, co-chairs and committee members. I'm Louise Sundin, and the hat I'm wearing today, as you may have figured out, is my BOSA hat, so as we won't have any confusion. I've been just recently, this past month, reappointed to another term on the board by Governor Dayton. But both Mary and I have been appointed by several governors, at least a couple, and so parties from both parties. So sometimes maybe that makes us schizophrenic. I don't know or whether that's true or not. But
at least bipolar.
Yes, but at least. So, Senator Wieger, I won't be confirmed until probably February. So if you don't like what I say today, you've got an out. Coming February.
We're all up for confirmation.
Yes, that's true. You before February, yes. Good point. I'm here to add our thanks to the legislative auditor for the report, who's was a great help in our collective rethinking of educator recruitment and preparation, licensure and certification, ethics and discipline, and continuous professional development for all educators. Without that impetus, I'm not sure we'd all be here today, and we wouldn't be facing this enormous, exciting opportunity. So I'm here to talk opportunity today. I hope that's where your heads are and where your thinking is. Back when the Board of Teaching was formed, we had a dream then, a dream of a full, comprehensive, independent, fully independent, professional board. What happened was has kind of oozed into being an amalgam, a split process, a confusing dual set of responsibilities, as was pointed out in the report. We now have a great opportunity to bring our collective knowledge and experience in this room to starting over and doing it right. You will hear from Director Doan in a minute that most states that have independent, fully independent professional licensing boards include both teachers and administrators under those boards. Our vision for the future includes all educators in the profession. It is one profession, so we're advocating one profession, one agency. So I used to have a PowerPoint I used when I was out convincing the troops that we needed to become a true profession, and it started with, it's the teaching profession, Bunky. So we kind of think that it is still one big profession. I have used for many years also a definition of a true profession that includes nine tenets. I'll just quickly run through them. Professions have an acknowledged knowledge base. Professions have a rigorous training and certification process for members. Professions have a workplace culture of high consulting and collaboration. Professions has systematic enculturation of new members. Professions have required and continuous learning built into the work cycle. Professions have high public accountability. We certainly know that lately. Professions have internal maintenance of high standards of practice. Professions have members who are responsible for client results. And professions have members who make autonomous decisions guided by a canon of ethics. So those tenets, I'm sure you will agree, apply to both teachers and administrators. We need a seamless, natural flow from one aspect or level or licensure or position in being an educator to the next with a building set of skills, knowledge, and outcomes. In 2010, this board undertook to redesign the principalship to meet the needs of the future. I think you may in your packet somewhere have a copy of a one-page summary of a lot of research work and time. We began shopping it to the legislature, so some of you had a visit from us over the last several sessions, and we shared it with you and asked you to help us think about it and possibly advance it. We have not had the time nor the funds to advance it, but it includes many ideas that fit the natural and the seamless, again, flow from teacher to principal to maybe superintendent in a three-tiered licensure process. So Board of Teaching is advocating a three-tiered process. We have also in our redesign a three-tiered process. Our redesign is the work of BOSA members with the leadership and experience of Dr. Candace Raskin and Dr. Jean Haar from Minnesota State Mankato. So whether it's recruitment or the professional standards we use or the performance-based assessment of licensure candidates or the mentoring of teacher leaders for the next step in their career or a tiered licensure system that begins at entry-level competency and moves towards exemplary demonstration of leadership ability and outcomes and structured continuous professional development throughout our careers, it is logical and it's sensible to do it together. One profession, one agency. So now that the actual, what the actual structure looks like, we don't know. And I don't know that anybody has, you know, made up a structure yet. But I think we need to work together, all of us in this room, to create one that makes sense. Some sort of an umbrella structure with separate subgroups responsible for the ethics and discipline seems to make sense. It's why our ethics committee on our board won't let me anywhere near that process for obvious reasons. But teacher voice is incredibly important in all of these processes. It's teaching experience that is incredibly important to this flow through the profession. It all flows, it all fits. So, of course, this vision of a seamless, flowing professional board that is independent, as are all other professional boards, I think, in this state, is an opportunity that will require a different system of financial support. But opportunity, but anything that would probably make more sense than the one that is crippling our progress now, from not enough funds to not enough staff, would be an improvement. So we look forward to working with you on that. So my request finally today is that we all work together to create a new entity with true independence, not tethered by some umbilical cord, to recruit and prepare, license, advance, and professionally develop a cadre of educators at all levels who will be supported by a system that will help them be the best they can be at preparing the next generations of Minnesota students. So thank you. BOSA members are prepared to roll up our sleeves and put on our hard hats and be part of the construction of something new and different and efficient and exciting. One profession, one agency. Thank you.
Thank you.
Deb, are you going to say anything?
Any questions?
Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, I am not prepared to speak today. I came to offer moral support, and as you can see, these two are highly skilled and gave you a plan that I hope we can work together on as well and move forward. I am the superintendent at North Branch and represent the superintendents on the Board of School Administrators and was appointed by Governor Dayton.
Thank you, Superintendent Hinton. And we do know you have a lot to add, but for brevity, I think we'll get have the overview. We're going to have a question, possibly two right now. We'll start with Representative Urusso, followed by Senator Pratt, and then we'll go to the next presentation. Then we'll have a chance to further delve into governance and suggestions that we are considering. Representative Urusso.
Thank you, Senator. I just wanted to say a quick welcome to Mary McBee. Back when you were new on the board, I was student teaching at Central High School.
Oh, small world. Nice to see you again.
Thank you for sharing. And Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to ask a really basic question. So if it's too simple, please forgive me. Must an administrator also hold a teaching license? And how does that work with your relationship with the Board of Teaching and the MDE?
You want to speak to that teacher?
No, you can talk.
The rule says there has to be Chairman. Teacher experience.
there are alternative pathways to that teacher experience. For instance, if a person has not had a teaching experience, they can, I think it's 1,050 hours of teaching experience that they can get through observations and student teaching without having actually taught 3 complete years. 1,050 hours is not 3 complete years or 5 years. But there are, we do have alternative ways for administrators to be licensed as principals. And usually a principal license comes first, then a superintendent or a director of community ed or a director of special ed. But we do have alternative ways that you don't have to have actually had teaching experience, but there has to be something that is akin to a teaching experience.
And Senator Wicker and Senator Pratt, there was a time when we required five years of teaching experience, and then a few years ago there was kind of a message that came down from above that said that it needed to be 3. It is now 3.
Three.
Senator Pratt?
Well, thank you. I had a follow-up, but I'll ask two follow-ups. Who is above? And the second is... I'm thinking of our new Minneapolis superintendent coming from out of state. So that superintendent can apply for an administrative license, superintendent's license, doesn't necessarily have to get a valid Minnesota teaching license through the Board of Teaching. Then is that your criteria for teaching experience is different than the Board of Teaching's? I just want to clarify that.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and Senator Pratt, if I could answer that question, I chair the subcommittee on that particular license that
you're talking about. For the record,
Superintendent? For the superintendent in Minneapolis, who requested an alternative pathway to that licensure. And the law says one thing, and then there's rules that guide it as well. And so in his particular case, he fell under the portion of the rule that says it would have been a hardship for Minneapolis to have to go through a second search. Or a third search, rather, they had gone through two as well. And so the committee looked at all of his experiences and also matched that with statute and with the rules that guide the statute. And under that hardship provision, that is how he was granted permission to move forward. He has to go to school yet and take credits, earn credits, and successfully pass those courses in order to be able to come back to us and ask us to approve him for a license beyond a variance for a superintendency. I hope I answered your question.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, there's also the last 4 Minneapolis superintendents have either gone through a variance or the alternative portfolio process. So this was not new.
I believe that Senator Pratt also asked what was above.
What was above?
From five years to 3 years.
At the time, it was the appointing authority, let's say that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Stay on we'll call here. We're going to go next to the Board of Teaching. Director Doan and Teacher Ed Specialist Luisi, please join us. We want to thank the Board for having a very nice conversation with, I believe everyone was there last Friday to get further background, and look forward to your presentation now. Welcome.
And I'm hoping that we have no technology issues. Just give me 1 second here.
Members, as they're getting ready, we do have several very good handouts. So I'll call your attention to that as well.
All right, off we go. Good afternoon. My name is Erin Doan. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Teaching, and I am here with my colleague, Alex Liuzzi. Go ahead.
Alex Liuzzi, Teacher Education Specialist at the Board of Teaching.
And there will be a test at the end of today to see how many people can say his last name before we leave. Again, as Mr. Chair mentioned, a number of you did join us for the board's annual retreat last week, and were able to sort of get a preview on some of the issues that we're here to talk with you about today. So thank you for taking time out of your schedules to join us, and we're happy to be back with you today. You did already get the chance to hear from the Minnesota Department of Education and their Educator Licensing Division. And what you heard in terms of the nuts and bolts that go together to make up the licensing division is really the steps that happen at the beginning of the application process. What I hope that you will see through the brief glimpse at the nuts and bolts of the Board of Teaching's work is that this is a continuous process that moves all the way through to policy set at the board level. We are not going to spend a great deal of time today with you on the particular duties or particular staff responsibilities in light of the fact that we have gone through many of these discussions before. That said, just as a reminder, we do have six staff that are a part of supporting the Board of Teaching's work. Myself as executive director, we have two teacher education specialists that are responsible for the oversight of 31 teacher preparation providers, somewhere in the neighborhood of just over 800 programs that are operating within those institutions. In addition, we do have a data specialist, data manager, who works on special permissions or exceptions to the board's rules in licensure situations, as well as one individual who works on professional practices or ethics, discipline of members of the teaching profession, in addition to an office and business manager. So the work, because we've gone into detail throughout the report and of the office of the auditor, we won't go deep into that today. The one thing that I did want to direct your attention to was provided in your materials for today is a handout that goes into some of the Board of Teaching by the Numbers is the title on the top of that document, and does go into some of the volume of items that are being processed by the board and some of our many different responsibilities. That said, we are here today to make some direct recommendations for where the board believes we would like to see changes made in terms of governance of teacher licensure. At this point, there is, as Ms. Sundin said just a few moments ago, there is a belief that we really need to be headed toward one agency for the profession, and that work does belong in the hands of a professional standards board. At this point, both the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators do have very similar responsibilities that we carry out in terms of professional practice, in terms of educator preparation and its oversight, and licensure of professionals in the field. We have been asked on occasion, and again, I think there are many, many more conversations to come as we spend time together throughout the coming year. But I think in terms of consideration for what responsibilities might remain with MDE, we would like to suggest that there be a consideration of those things that pertain with oversight of a school district, that those items remain with MDE. So compliance to licensure rules for districts and charters, teacher principal and evaluation, which ties into the conversation we have when we talk about licensure renewal, and also maltreatment reporting, which feeds into our teacher ethics discussions, that anytime you have a district that is reporting back to an agency, that oversight of the K-12 system does belong, in our opinion, with the department. I think there are a few advantages that were called out by the report from the Office of the Legislative Auditor. I'd like to elaborate on those just very briefly. Again, maintenance of and oversight of the profession by members of the profession is of critical importance. There are 12 other standards boards in the nation at this point, and that number is growing. So while the OLA report did point out that a majority of states do not have a standards board at this time, that is the direction that many are headed. Minnesota takes great pride in being one of the first states to have a professional standards board for teachers and educators. Again, to increase accountability as one agency, both this and the next point of streamlining communications regarding the needs of our professionals in the community, these two pieces really are all about how do we help people understand who we are and where they go for the assistance that they require. And I think you've heard multiple examples over the course of the last 2 years of how vitally important that is. when someone comes to our state from another state or whether they be a trained educator in our state. It's important that they know where to turn and where to get the answers that they need in order to move forward with employment. And then finally, the final items are aligning the governance of teaching and education with the other professions that are located in Minnesota. We do believe that education as a profession should be in alignment with having its own independent standards board. And in addition, aligning our own governance of the education profession with the governance in other states. As brought forward by both the department and the Board of School Administrators prior to this conversation, there are some other considerations that we would like to put on the table. First, the licensure appeal process is something that was brought forward in the OLA report. The fact that the licensure appeal process was confusing, that it had been redone in terms of our work with the Office of the Attorney General, and I think was brought up also as one of the things that may be a reason for not moving all licensure to a professional standards board. And in fact, I'd like to bring forward the suggestion that it's really just the opposite. As long as we are having to go in and take a good look at our licensure appeals process, there really is no reason why there can't be an appeals process that operates within a single agency. So that will be a point of consideration. Administrative services come up again and again as well. Right now, the Board of Teaching, with a staff of 6 people, does rely heavily on the Department of Education for a number of our business processes, and whether it is the Department of Education that is providing those services to the board, or whether it is a small agency resource team, whether it is an organizational structure that's built in, that capacity is built in terms of FTE, or whether there's another support that's aligned, that is a decision that will have to be made. How business functions and communication functions and technology functions are supported in order to make this a service, licensing a service that is seamless for constituents. And then finally, I'll go back to the point that Ms. Nguyen made late earlier in terms of our IT systems. Regardless of the entity that does hold the licensure process, there is an upgrade for IT systems that will be needed at somewhere along the line. I think, Representative Erickson, you tied into very, very accurately what a lot of the concern has been, and that is that the system does require that once you complete an online process, that you're still having to send things via U.S. mail and allow an online application and other materials to match up at some point in the process. And that does cause confusion for both folks outside as well as inside that are responsible for matching all of those things together. Beyond that, I think as we start to have deeper discussion about the changes that would need to be made in order to see this as a one-agency conversation or a one-agency process, I believe that Senator Dahl mentioned at your last meeting that there may have to be some items that are put on the table for consideration as far as, I think the word that you used was unsession, our own unsession. But I think really it's more than that. At this point for us, it's really talking about efficiencies. Right now, the Board of Teaching licenses a number of related service professions that are already licensed by their own profession. It's not clear to those of us who are having these conversations currently why we are really taking another license and putting a stamp on approval to issue again. For instance, for school psychologists, for speech-language pathologists, for some of those other related services, we will definitely be keeping abreast of conversations with stakeholders from Education Minnesota, with the School Board Association, and others to make sure that we're having the full set of considerations on the table while we're looking at that. Finally, as part of our conversation last week, we did talk a lot about our recommendations for tiered licensure, and I will turn the conversation over to Mr. Liuzzi for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Liuzzi.
Yes, thank you, Senator Winker. So because of the rulemaking process that the board was put under a year ago with the licensure process, board members and board staff really have put hundreds of hours into looking at the licensure system and looking at what it could look like in a tiered licensure system. So our hope here is to provide that brief overview, and when you dig deeper into that conversation, we hope that you'll ask us for more details on the process that we have here, because there are a lot more. First, the board looked at what are the core challenges that are faced by a licensure system and how could a tiered licensure system address those. So currently you see the four that we looked at, the main one being finding that balance between maintaining high expectations for teachers and yet keeping the availability there for districts that have shortage needs. The second one was really brought up by the OLA. How can we address the parity between in-state and out-of-state trained teachers? The third one is big. Our licensure structure right now has a single license with two separate names or two different licenses with the same name. So simplifying that structure, and yet we still wanted to be able to keep the flexibility there for teachers. And then finally, we know that a tiered licensure system can't answer all the questions regarding teacher the shortages and teacher retention, but we think that it can help with some teacher retention. So here's the model. And I like to look at this sort of on three levels. What you have here is a summary. We have created a lot of details that go behind this summary that I'm would be able to answer questions of today. And then there's below those details, there's going to be weeds that come out within the rulemaking process after the structure is created. So there's some pieces that won't have answers today. In this model, there's four tiers, and within each tier, you sort of have a left-hand column, which might be more of a traditional route, and then on the right-hand column are sort of the exceptions, that flexibility I talked about. So tier one is a teacher does not have teacher preparation at this point. A residency model is a combining of a lot of different licenses where a teacher can enter the classroom while they are trained to be a teacher. It provides that flexibility for districts to get candidates into the classroom, candidates that want to be teachers, want to be trained as teachers. But we know there are lots of situations that don't fit that as well, that are emergency situations and a person cannot even start teacher preparation. So we have on the right-hand column in a tier one an emergency license for someone just to enter that classroom and be there for the students so that someone is there. But again, on a limited basis, the emphasis of this model really is focusing on that high quality. How do we move teachers from entering that classroom at that initial stage moving up? So tier two provides something new to our structure right now. The initial license piece would be a three-year license that would promote mentorship, support, time for teachers to complete a lot of the statutory requirements under renewal, to really provide a lot of the preparation that doesn't happen within teacher preparation but happens after. A lot of that support that is missing in our current model. Again, under Tier 2, the exceptions is teachers that currently have a license in one area but a district needs them to teach another subject. So that provisional license remains there as an option for districts to have that. Tier 3 is the most common, what has about seven different names previously had seven different names in statute. A professional license, 5 years, that is unlimited, renewed every 5 years. Within that tier, we have created another exception, a special credential that brings together a lot of the challenges that we continue to see about different areas that don't have licensure, but we want teachers to be able to stay in that area. Right now, a teacher teaching at a project-based learning school would need to come repeatedly to the board to ask for waivers and exceptions and waivers and exceptions. This special credential would say, start on a provisional and then receive some kind of special training in that unlicensed area, and you could receive that and continue it attached to your professional license. It provides a lot of that flexibility that we see schools and districts needing. Finally, Tier 4 adds that professional growth that many people have been clamoring for teachers, and it adds it in two different levels. One, master teacher, the pedagogy level, if you will, to increase the level of expertise within teaching students. And then a teacher leader, acknowledging that some teachers want to focus on working with their colleagues and mentorship within the teaching profession, they would have a license as well in that right-hand column. So again, a very brief overview. We have lots of details that go behind how you can dig into each of those, but here are sort of the key elements we want to highlight. High quality is paramount throughout this, and we believe that teacher preparation is a key piece to having quality teachers in there. But teacher preparation is not a single pathway, that there are many different pathways not only to entering the teacher profession, but also being trained as a teacher, and we feel this model supports those pathways, including that residency really supports what was talked about last legislative session, the Grow Your Own programs that are really growing. Along that continuum, we see ongoing development as key for teachers, not just stopping at a tier and ending, but that continuous growth is key to the teaching profession. And again, we feel all of these pieces really encourage teachers to stay in the profession, which retention is a major piece to decreasing the shortages we have in teachers. Instead of trying to get in more and more teachers, let's figure out how we can improve the model to keep the teachers that we have in the profession. And in the details, we have specific elements that we feel would increase the retention of teachers of color as well, something that was talked about often last year. Finally, there are many next steps that are going to come from this and many questions that will rise from looking at the tiered licensure models. And we just wanted to quick point out that, again, we feel that there's a rulemaking process that would help answer that, really looking at the experts, the stakeholders within tiered licensure. We feel like you will have a major role not only in creating that overview structure, but in looking at the statutes and what statutes get in the way of some of these things and that unsession that was talked about. And finally, what was brought up last month was also how does licensure renewal fit into this and promote ongoing development within teachers? The board has already initiated a conversation about that, and we would want that conversation to be part of the tiered licensure model as well. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll take one question, and then we'll hear from the next presentation, and then we're going to open it up for further comments and questions. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much to all of the presentations today have been very good. One question I had, and this was covered a little bit in your slide presentation, but also I was able to go to the roundtable discussion last week, which was very beneficial. And I think I'm hearing maybe a shift in approach a little bit from discussion on Friday with regards to one entity and combining BOSA, Board of School Administrators, with the Board of Teaching, which didn't seem to be the pathway that the Board of Teaching was suggesting last week, but are you suggesting that now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, yes, that is what I'm suggesting. I think the concern that was brought forward by the Board of Teaching members was that there was an element of considering teacher or administrator discipline that seemed inappropriate to be given to members that were outside of the teacher administrator ranks. And I think you heard Ms. Sundin earlier explain that we still think that there is an option for breaking that work out into a committee structure so that it is handled by members of the peer group. But yes, at this point, what we are suggesting is that consolidation as to one professional standards board to represent the entire profession.
And Mr. Chair, if I could follow up.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. And Ms. Stone, and I'm sorry, is it?
Liuzzi.
Liuzzi. Thank you. Mr. Liuzzi, on your proposed tier licensure structure, would you be suggesting then sort of a difference in composition of whoever would serve on this entity based upon the different licensure structure that you would propose? Would you be needing somebody who has attained master teacher level to be one of the board members in that? Is that something that you fleshed out in discussions among the Board of Teaching yet?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, no, I don't think we've gone to that level of detail at this point. As far as composition of the board, I think the conversation that was had by the Board of Teaching last week was that there was a concern that that teacher voice be adequately represented among the membership. And within the resources that I've provided for all of you today, there is a list that gives you some models of other standards boards around the nation. And the ability to sort of look at how others might view that composition. But I think your points are well taken regarding, what types of teachers or teachers on what types of license or in what settings might be considered.
Thank you. If you'd indulge me for one
yes.
last question,
no.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you. And then finally, just on the IT system discussion, and I know this is something we've discussed, at the Finance Committee level, and we know that there is a great need to make some improvements in what we have. But I guess also question right now, we've got the Board of Teaching and then the MDE, which does some things, and I'm assuming that it's one system that people are attached to. Would that continue to be the case? Or I guess if we moved more into one agency, an independent board, have you thought through kind of then how the IT system would need to be changed, and would it be a platform that would be accessible by both MDE and this independent agency, or would it be completely separate?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, yes, we have looked at that question, and probably that question more than many others. At this point, the board is able to access MDE systems to be able to look at different questions of licensure. However, it seems as though, based on a number of recommendations, both by the audit and internally, that change is inevitable at this point, and we can be designing systems for the need as we see fit. I don't think at this point that we would necessarily need to allow the technology to dictate the structure of governance that we're looking for. However, I think it's important that we make sure that that the Board of Teaching and MDE maintain licensure data systems that speak to one another so that we're able to link data. As well, within the last year, we have been in communication with the Office of Higher Education to make sure that Board of Teaching systems are also accounting for information that's being tracked at that level.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Loon, any one more question that we'll take? Okay, stay tuned. Next, we'll go to the Board of Architecture, Engineering, Land Surveying, Landscape Architecture, Geoscience, and Interior Design, and it's got a long acronym as well. But we'll go to Doreen Frost, and we'll ask Representative Yaruso to help in facilitating some brief discussion on this, maybe provide some initial comments as well. This gives us an additional perspective as we look at other licensing as well. Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So briefly, the reason I suggested that we ask this board in is because there's some similarity between the licensure's tasks that they have to accomplish and the sorts of things we're considering. For one, if you notice from their name, they oversee many different types of licensures. They have some commonality to varying degrees between different ones, but there's that big long list of initials reflects the fact that there's a bunch of different licensures. Also, they have a two-tiered system because for engineers, you've got an engineering training and a professional engineering. They have a combination of a portfolio kind of system and a national examination. And they also oversee disciplinary procedures having to do with standards of practice and ethics and legal considerations. So I understand you've got a brief presentation, and then if you don't cover something that I know would be relevant to us, I'll ask about it.
Good afternoon. As I said, I'm Doreen Frost. In full disclosure, I am part-time to the agency with the seven professions that you just mentioned. The geoscience stands for geology and soil science. I'm also, 50% of my job is to be the executive director for the certified public accountants. So I come to you with the two licensure boards. We share a back office, but we do not share. Their statutory authorities are different. Their financing is different. Their staffing is different. The Architecture Engineering Board, as I said, represents seven professions. We have 20,000 licensees. We have a staff of 6.5, me being the 0.5. We have 21 board members representing the seven professions and five public members. We oversee, in addition to the 20,000 licensees, we have, especially in the engineering realm, we have a lot of foreign applicants, not just applicants coming from across the United States, but a high level of foreign degreed applicants that come before the licensure board. Those credentials are evaluated by the national councils first, and then they come before the board. We have to deal with variances. We have a strong enforcement division for both boards. Certified public accountants have a lot of regulation and revoke a high number of licenses each year. So we do have a multidiscipline board. We are a standalone agency with the exception of our, of course, Minute and our finance, although we process all of this stuff internally, because we do not have a large enough staff for separation of duties, the Department of Commerce provides us our financial assistance so that we can ensure that separation of duties. I am a little fish out of water here today, so I'm ready and happy to answer any questions that you have. I can tell you it's worked very well. This multidiscipline board is unique across the United States or the 55 jurisdictions that we are involved with in the sense that there are approximately seven other states that have close to the combined boards. Usually it's just architecture and engineering, but we do report to a national council all of our enforcement actions. So each of the national councils gets the national discipline, similar to some of the professions that you're addressing today.
Thank you. One of the issues that's before this group is how to balance the the requirements for people that are trained in state versus people coming that may have been licensed in other states or may have just trained in other states. I mentioned there's a national exam, but there is a Minnesota passing standard for that. Can you explain, you know, what kind of process needs to happen when someone coming from out of state is looking to be licensed in Minnesota as a professional engineer?
If you'd indulge me, I will do professional engineering, architecture, and land surveying in that group. Geologists as well. All of them have national exams. Minnesota is unique for the land surveyors in that they have to take a state-specific exam no matter where they come from. They have to pass all three exams to get their license here. And when we get out-state applicants coming in, they do need to come and sit for the Minnesota local exam. As it relates to the what we call the comity applications, they have to meet the same standards that are in Minnesota. We do have a higher number from Wisconsin, Arizona, and I'm drawing a blank on the third state, that the education requirements don't match, and then they do not get a license in the state of Minnesota. And we have gone all the way to the Court of Appeals upholding the education standard for professional engineers in that particular case. However, we do address variances, and most engineering degrees in the United States have a four-year degree, so we don't have that. But they do have to be in an accredited program. And they have the ability to make up some of those courses, so it's on a case-by-case basis. They can be very time-consuming.
Can you explain the difference in the two tiers, you know, the in-training status versus the professional engineer?
Yes. Most of the professions, at least the architects, have various levels, and then the engineers have, they get to take their first exam after or in their last semester of college. They do not get their EIT certificate number until they give us their final official transcript. After that time, they need to acquire anywhere from 3 to 6 years of additional experience before they become a professional engineer. They come back before our board at that point to make sure that their experience is progressive engineering experience. And we rely heavily at that point on our what we call our subject matter experts, which are our licensing board members that are on the board to look at that experience. Architects also start their exam process early, and then they also have to have acquired experience. But their acquired experience needs to be in each particular unit of study, and that record is established by the National Council, and the state accepts that. It used to be called IDP. It's now called AXP, and that is part of their final process. The geologists also have an in-training. The land surveyors have an in-training. They all have in-training where they first take their first of their national exams, have to complete their education, and they come back after a period of time to seek permission to sit for the final exam, and they have to have their experience when they sit for that exam.
Just for clarification, those two exams are they're 8 hours long, each of them, but they are national exams, and so the material is pretty well defined of what's going to be on the test, what the conditions for the test are, and so on. One of the key features of the period between the engineering and training or the other in training and your professional license is two things. That it's not just the time that passes, but it is also that you have been under the supervision of somebody who is licensed. So that's kind of like, to compare with teaching, that's like 5 years of student teaching rather than the 14 weeks or whatever. And then the other thing is that your practice has expanded in scope and responsibility during that time. So I brought in my prop. This is the project folder I brought in when I sat with a committee to explain my background when I did that. Just checking my notes to see if I missed anything here. Oh, can you talk about, you mentioned discipline, and a big chunk of the discipline involves people who have gone out and practiced publicly without having licensure. So aside from that, what other kinds of disciplinary procedures does the board oversee?
Chairman, members of the committee, and the public, I just left a complaint committee a few minutes before I got here today. So our complaint committee for both boards addresses anything from ethical violations to felony or misconduct don't satisfy the standards of working on a particular project, insufficient work, work that they didn't adequately supervise. As Representative Russo mentioned, when you're in the in-training status, you have to have the direct supervision of a licensee, and it is for an extended period of time. So an example today, we heard everything from ethical breaches to misconduct to poor land surveying. They didn't do everything that needed to be done. Those are the types of cases that are before the licensing board in the enforcement. The complaint committee is made up of 5 board members, and a representative from the Assistant Attorney General's office is there at all times. We also get the reinstatements where we've revoked or suspended a license, and we were addressing something like that today as well, where someone had received a suspended license, had completed their time of suspension, and had satisfied the original issues of the stipulation, but the license may be granted by the board, so the complaint committee has to handle those types of issues as well.
Thank you. And as I mentioned, I asked for them to come in because I've had experience with both teaching licensure and engineering licensure. And it's an example of how in Minnesota we can manage the multiple tiers with the multiple kinds of licensure and have the one of the things I'm particularly interested in with the tiered licensure possibility for teaching is that idea of the growth in the profession, because it's something we don't currently really recognize. When a new teacher is licensed, you know, their first few years of teaching, it's all about the classroom. But all of us who've been in teaching know that as you continue in your department, you take on additional duties. And we don't really have any way that we recognize that growth and experience, the curriculum development and the textbook choosing, you know, and all of these things that go with it. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So kind of to follow up, I think, a little bit with Representative Russo, you've got criteria, academic criteria that you set that people have to meet, as well as you assess, from what I understand, experiential items. So let's say we have somebody coming from out of state who maybe doesn't have a particular course, but can demonstrate that they've had that experience. How do you manage that process so you're not just checking a box? Yes, I've got a transcript that says this, but that you feel comfortable that the experience by the applicant is meeting the. You might want to ask that. Go ahead. Oh, you might.
Thank you. So it isn't actually, because the question doesn't really fit the process.
Okay.
Is why I'm answering it, because she mentioned the need to have a degree from an accredited program.
Right.
So it doesn't get down to the course level. Other than that, if you haven't had those courses, you're unlike, where that shows up is on the competency tests.
Okay.
So the engineering and training tests or the other training tests cover the basic materials that you would learn in an undergraduate program, and then the more advanced test goes more in depth in stuff you would have learned more about as you progress. This board isn't evaluating courses people have taken unless it's those exceptions that weren't accredited.
Ms. Frost.
Chairman, members of the committee, we also have Representative Russo is correct for the large professions, the architects and the engineers. For the smaller professions, as far as numbers, the geologists, the soil scientists, and the land surveyors, we are evaluating course by course. In the particular case, our statutes and rules allow, but they are very specific as to they have to be in these qualified areas. And then to address your experience issue, no, they're not just checking a box. Because the work has to be done under a licensed professional is signing off that experience has also been verified. So we are really looking at When we get an application and they are signing off on these areas of experience, it's actually being signed off by another licensee who also has a code of conduct and also holds a license, so that there's also the credibility. It can be a licensee in any jurisdiction, and we do confirm that those people are indeed licensed. So we are doing that. And then to address one issue that I did not address that I think is important as you go forward and are addressing this very complex issue that's on the table. One of the privileges you have when you have a multidisciplined board is that the statutes and rules are vetted out at such a high level, because before we come before this body to make a statutory change, we've already had to go to 7 or 8 different professions and make sure that that language is not only clear to the profession being regulated, but to the other professions that are going to be voting on this proposed administrative rule package before we even go forward. So there is this there's this organic clarity that takes place when you have multi-disciplines on a regulatory board that saves some of those big debates before they come to the legislative arena, because we're having them as a regulatory board.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Wiegert. Ms. Frost, have you looked at our teacher licensure makeup and review that to any extent to compare it to what you've just described to us?
I look, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I looked at it at a very high level before coming to this meeting because I was perplexed as to why I was going to be here. But I would have to say it was just at a very high level.
Okay, thank you, because you probably don't have the time, but it would be interesting to hear your perspective on our present organizational chart compared to yours, because I think what happens in yours is, isn't that first tier almost like an apprenticeship, and then the signing off after all the other requirements are reached to go into tier two? Would you compare it to an apprenticeship?
I hate to use that word and go back to my board and say that that's what I said it was.
Sure.
Because it's really varied between the various professions. I would say more so, for example, a land surveyor, because they're boots on the ground for that initial level of experience, but not anywhere near that in the architecture world and some of the engineering world because of technology, the way that they're delivering the services, how they're overseeing those experience levels. So I don't think I can compare that the same way.
And Mr. Chair, and Ms. Frost, your 21-member board does include the 5 public, or is that in addition to?
I apologize for the lack of clarity. Yes, it includes the 5 members, our public members.
Mm-hmm. And Ms. Frost, to what extent is that large a board efficient?
That's a question. Chairman, members of the committee, public. People often ask me that, especially when I travel nationally, when you have boards that are 6 people or 5 people. It's extremely efficient because prior to going at every board, full board meeting, prior to going to the board, they are meeting in sections. So the architects and the certified interior designers are meeting, and I think the landscape architects are all meeting in one, and the engineers and the land surveyors and the geologists and the soil scientists are meeting in different meetings to deal initially with their professional issues, their rules, their things, whatever may be before them as a body. They then make recommendations to the full board, and we also have committee meetings that meet on licensure, credentials, that sort of thing. So the board meets in several committee meetings prior to the board meeting being upstairs, but it all takes place in the same day with the exception of the complaint committee, which meets every month. The board otherwise meets 8 times a year. Thank you very much.
We'll take one more question from Senator Claussen, then we're going to open it up for questions to any of the presenters, and then that'll be followed up on a discussion on governance. Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to draw a parallel here between the two professions. If you have a person that's coming from another state, they've graduated from an accredited institution and a program. They passed the exams for our state and at a national level. What would you allow them then to work in the state of Minnesota? And if what would be the other requirements? Do you have other provisional requirements? You talked about apprenticeships and so on. But if a person coming with that background, how would you treat them?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, one of the blessings on the professions that I have, with the exception of the geologists and soil scientists, because they're fairly new, they just came on board, in no pun intended, in 1996, enabling legislation in 95. They actually had the rules done in 96. With those two exceptions, most of the licensure is pretty uniform across the country. They have the national exams. That's across the board. Most of them have the accredited education, and they have the experience, so we don't require anything else. Where it gets a little wonky is some states don't either don't have the same education, or they came in on under a variance of some court of exception in that other state. So, or the other thing would be is if they have discipline, and we do then check to make sure that there's been compliance. So otherwise, we can turn around we typically turn around an engineering license where it comes with the National Council record, so it's all bundled up, ready to go within 6 days. So we can turn those around fairly quickly if they have a complete application when they come in.
Follow-up, Senator Clausen.
Just a very quick follow-up. Do you actually review transcripts?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We, not at the same level I don't as an educator would, but we have national databases where we confirm that that is an accredited program. Mm-hmm. We check every one of those. And also, we actually check that the degree's been rendered. It's on an official transcript. We track that, and there's also a fraudulent record alert that we get from the national councils that alert us for the various schools.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Ms. Frost. Stay ready in case there's a question. We're going to, for additional comments, I'm going to ask members if there's any additional questions they'd like to pose now to the previous testifiers. Representative Loon.
Mr. Chair, and actually it was for Ms. Frost, if she come back up. Sorry. So, Ms. Frost, and I apologize if you covered this earlier. I was trying to listen intently to things that would correlate to teacher and administrator licensure processes, but how are the people that serve on your board selected, and is there a process for, are they term limited, staggered terms, rotate on and off, are they suggested by members of their profession, how does that process work?
Ms. Ross.
Representative, two things. First of all, in the past, I've been in my position. I came to the board 20 years ago. I've been the executive director for, 16, 17, 18 years. In the past, the appointments would get the recommendation of the professional societies. All of our appointments for both boards are appointed by the governor. For the Board of Accountancy, they do not have term limits. They have five CPAs and two public members. The Architecture and Engineering Board is also appointed by the governor, and it's three architects, five engineers, two land surveyors, and sprinkling with the others, and five public members. They also are appointed by the governor. After the Federal Trade Commission case that many of us have all heard about for the Board of North Carolina Dentistry, the governor's office, we don't send up letters of recommendation as a board itself. The society still will send letters talking about people's leadership, but they do not select or nominate names to go before that body. They will typically, somebody might come to them after they've been in service and ask for a letter of support, which is different than elected by the body itself.
Thank you, Representative Loon.
Thank you, and Mr. Chair and Ms. Frost, is there any kind of a conscious attempt to have people at various stages in their careers serving on the board? So you've got people newer to the professions versus those with maybe many years of experience? Or could you talk a little bit about contextually how the board is composed?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee and the public, it's a big debate nationally as well as on the board. And I know it's something that the governor works at, creating diversity both geographically, all of the different areas, as well as the population that we have. Because one of the things we as a licensing board address, as well as it's a big discussion nationally, is how we are effectively communicating and getting the information out and having the ability to do so. And, you know, are we doing the Twitter and the Facebook and all of those things? And that is a big issue. Our statutory requirement for the Architecture and Engineering Board says that in order to serve as a public member, you must be licensed for 10 years and 5 years in responsible charge to be that. The accountants do not have that. Their statutory requirement has to do on whether or not they're from a large firm or from a small firm, so that the top four don't suddenly control a licensing board in the state of Minnesota. So we do have that. It's interesting because we have consciously, in fact, just last board meeting for the architecture board, we brought in what we call the emerging professionals in order to have some dialogue on how we can serve them. And is our information even getting out there? When do they find out about a licensure? We lose a lot of engineers and CPAs in the initial stages after their education. So it is an ongoing dialogue. There are some statutory limitations, and quite frankly, I think the bigger limitation is that when you're first starting your career, you also sometimes are starting families. You have demands trying to cut your teeth and establish yourself in these regulated professions. You're working a lot of different things and have a home life. So we don't get a high number of applicants in that, even the first 10 years out, and it is something that this board has been working on, and we do have young people on our boards for the first time in a couple of years.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And members, as we look at additional questions, just as a reminder, on the back of your agenda, we have listed some of the key recommendations made by the auditor, as well as our legislative charge. And you'll see it kind of gets into three main areas: clarity in statutes, looking at restructuring, and also at consolidating agencies. Who would like to go next? Representative Yaruso, followed by Senator Clausen.
Thank you. I've got a comment to begin with. I think, you know, we've heard a number of times about the need to upgrade the technical platform. And although $2 million sounds like a lot of money, that can very quickly be chewed up by a lot of extra staff time spent on trying to piece that information together when it's not readily available. So I think that we should seriously consider moving forward with that and trying to document, you know, what is the real cost of that in terms of the greater efficiency we might have. So I've got a couple of questions about numbers of licenses and whatnot that maybe the BOT is right. I don't know or maybe it's MDE. Who's better for telling me about current numbers and...
Well, we'll have someone from each agency.
As Senator Clausen points out, that's part of the problem that I need to ask.
Okay,
that question.
Fire away.
Okay, so I was doing a quick back of the envelope thing. If we have 21,000 renewals, those are for 5 years, so that gives us 105,000 people there. Do we still have lifetime licenses out there? Well, we have at least one. My mother-in-law, I think, has one. But. How many people are there out there that still have lifetime licenses, and are any of them still teaching?
Senator Wieger, Representative Yaruso, I don't know that I would have any even estimate of how many there are. It's kind of like the maybe veterans. You know, I think they're probably there's less and less of them every day. I don't know, Ms. Stone. Do you have any more of how ideas okay. of how there would be?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Yaruso, although we don't have that off the top of our head, I think we
and
do.
And just
have
a reminder for the tape, just yep. state yes. your okay. name. We know you, but yep. for the tape.
Okay. Wayne Nguyen from the Department of Education, we can get you that information. And Mr. Onsetter, Ms. Doan, could correct me if I'm wrong. We no longer issue those licenses, although people still have those licenses.
Thank you.
Representative Yaruso.
Unless there's a sizable number of people there. We're getting, if we look at the number of initial licenses versus the number of renewals, we're getting close to a 10% turnover per year because, you know, the like I said, there's about 105,000 of people that are have renewable licenses, and you're getting 11,000 initial licenses. So it is a sizable turnover. One of the questions I have about turnover, though, is we don't really always distinguish between turnover that involves people with initial licenses that then that don't continue in the teaching profession versus more experienced people. And so do we have any idea for numbers of, you know, how many people leave in those first few years versus how many people are leaving kind of mid-career, I mean, not, you know, not retirements, but people like me that have a license and aren't teaching?
Senator Wiegert and Representative Russo, they're, again, at my ready, Nels Onstead, sorry, at the Department of Education, sorry. There is an ability to get data in regard to licensed individuals who are not working, but I do not have that at my ready.
Mr. Chair, Representative Russo, again, Wayne Nguyen with the Department of Education. The Teacher Supply and Demand Report does have some of that information for you, and it does go into information such as reasons why they moved out of state, or they'd retired, or they. So we do have some of that information that we can make available to you.
Thank you. So just to follow up to that, so the reason I'm asking about this, it's a little bit outside of the scope of what we're talking about, but we did have a goal mentioned of helping teacher retention. And so we should keep in mind that those are two different classes of people. And the reason why people might leave in mid-career, there's a whole variety of reasons, as you mentioned. But some of that might be addressed by the tiered licensure if we can, you know, put something in place that recognizes people's experience. But on the front end, on the initial licensure aspect, you know, people have the provisional licenses. That's a completely different situation. And some of the people that leave the profession are people that probably, frankly, don't belong in the profession, and we don't necessarily want to keep them there if they've discovered that teaching's really not a good thing for them or that they aren't equipped to handle it for some reason. But there are other people in that initial period where if we talk about looking at a better induction system, a better mentoring system that could be addressed in part by having this tiered system that includes some expectations that there's going to be mentoring or something happening along with that, that would address that. So I think rather than just talking globally about retention, we should kind of keep those things in mind because they're really different animals. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, there seems to be some agreement on the governance issue that we need to consolidate into one agency, and I think that's a good recommendation. I'd be curious when we're looking at teacher licensure, it seems where we're having the most difficulty is looking at standards, that people don't meet the Minnesota standards. Could you elaborate on what issues do you encounter most often when you're looking at standards? What are people not coming from other states or in the state of Minnesota? What standards seem to be the stumbling blocks most frequently?
Stone.
Mr. Chair, Senator Claussen, I think it's important to keep in context the testimony that we've heard over the past couple of years. A lot of times the testimony that's been brought before you is to speak about requirements for taking additional coursework, and perhaps that coursework is to address reading requirements or to address human relations coursework, which are both statutory requirements. Sometimes the request for coursework comes from a mismatch between a licensure in another state for someone coming to Minnesota. So maybe that's someone who's strictly worked in a secondary field in their state and come to Minnesota, and the expectation is that you have the skills to work across the whole K-12 spectrum. So there are some of those pieces that are, I think, what you're actually hearing about in terms of complaints about our system and the requirements for people to do more when they get to Minnesota versus looking at individual standards. I know that as we talk about parity for those candidates who are coming from other states and those that are being trained in Minnesota, One of the comments that we hear quite often, and I believe you've heard Ms. Christ speak about this before, are the vast number of standards that we have that detail very, very, very specific information. Do I think that there is room for growth in that area in terms of making revision? Absolutely. As long as we are keeping in context that we're having equal expectations for everyone that is going to be in a classroom in front of children.
Senator Pratt, followed by Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a few questions, but I want to kind of follow up on Ms. Stone's comment here and Senator Clausen's question. Because we do, we've kind of got an imprecise answer. And I think one of the things you've heard me say in the past is we rely, I think, too much on the transcript. And just because something's in statute doesn't mean it should be. Mm-hmm. And it should be something we can change. Have you looked at the efficacy and the value provided by some of these standards? Or are you in the process of evaluating these standards so that, you know, it's easy to say we've got more and so we're better, and that's not necessarily the case. Mm-hmm. We want more better standards, right? Or we just want better standards, not more. And so are you in the process or have you done any sort of assessment around the standards? Because what we've heard in both Senator Clausen and I, both in this and the higher ed committee, is it's difficult for a teaching candidate to get through in 4 years.
Mr. Chair, Stone. Senator Pratt, I think to your question about standards. So first of all, the standards that are in place for teacher licensure in Minnesota are aligned to the NTASC standards, which are a nationally adopted body of standards for teacher education. So do I think that we as a state have added many, many more standards to that? No. I think that our standards are very specific in terms of the detail that underlies each of the major groups of standards, be it for multicultural education, for lesson planning, for sort of the major buckets, if you will. In terms of, you know, whether or not something is in statute and whether or not we could take things out of statute, I think there's more flexibility provided in things that are addressed in administrative rule because it allows a governing body, in this case, in my own experience, the Board of Teaching, to provide a common sense rule variance when there is an exception or something that doesn't quite fit the model. I think the approach that has been taken by the Board of Teaching within the last decade at least has been when there is a requirement in statute that the board does not have the authority to actually waive or look for another opportunity to meet that particular requirement. So, yes, we are reviewing those standards in an ongoing way. Yes, we're looking at a realignment to the current NTASC standards, which are not all that different from where we've been. But I think that there is a review that will come as a part of this process of taking a good look at our statutes as well to see are the pieces that are dictated at that level truly necessary and are there barriers that are present there?
So just to make sure I understand, so we've got these NTASC standards that are national in scope and adopted. And let's take a Wisconsin, for example. And maybe they define their standards based on NTEST as well. If I understand you right, it's not the standard that's different necessarily. It's how we interpret meeting that standard and what we and at what specificity we define how that standard is met.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, I think that's true. Yes, how we interpret the information that's coming in front of us. I think what's a particular challenge for this group is that the conversation that we were having even 4 years ago about this very subject matter is very different since the end of the 2015 session. There were statutes that were put in place at that time to say very specifically, you were looking for evidence of these things and nothing more. And I think that practice has changed since that point in time. If I may just briefly draw in the comments from Ms. Frost, I think one of the challenges that you see in this conversation that you don't see in other professions is that we have this very necessary pathway or group of pathways that has begun, which is happening outside of accredited higher education institutions that we need to account for, and that you see a system in many states that's struggling with how do we measure quality if we're not talking about accredited institutions and the coursework they provide. And I think that there has been progress made to a lot for or account for experience. The Department of Education actually has a verification of experience form that they have used for the past 2 years, if not maybe a little more than that, that is different than the conversation we were having before. So I think some of the things that you're hearing the state of Minnesota struggle with, you're hearing many states across the country struggle with because of the development of the profession and the shortages that are present everywhere.
Just Senator Pratt, question. I think we have multiple requests to intervene
and
for
I promise this is my last
we'll
one.
We'll go.
And this one is for Ms. Nguyen. The legislative auditor recommended consolidation under the Board of Teaching. Does the department have an opinion in favor or concerns with that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, Wayne Nguyen again with the Department of Education. As we indicated in our response to the Office of the Legislative Auditor, we do agree that it should be consolidated under one entity. I think what we tried to show you today in our presentation is that there's a lot of activities done by the Educator Licensing Division at MDE that fall outside of licensing teacher licenses and administration licenses. So we really do, we would like you to really consider all of the various activities done in the Educator Licensing Division in the determination of where licensing should be consolidated and whether or not it makes sense to have an educator licensing entity or if it resides within a state agency. At this point, we don't have a specific recommendation as to where it should end up.
Thanks.
Members, in the order taken, Senator Dahl, Representative Loon, Senator Claussen, and I'll note I haven't had a chance to ask any questions. So. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A quick question for both groups here. I was struck by the 30,000 phone calls and 15,000 emails and 1,700 walk-ups. That's about 186 a day by my Iowa math business days. do you have any idea? I mean, I know password resets was mentioned, but is there some pattern? And I know the first three recommendations here talk about providing more information, more complete information, et cetera, et cetera. Do we have, based on that much input from the calls you're getting, do you have some idea of what areas you might be able to really get to right away in terms of providing more information?
Senator Wieger, Senator Dahl, Nels Onsen from the Department of Education. Again, in regard to numbers, but you mentioned the password resets, and again, I don't want to beat the dead horse of the system, right? The mm-hmm. the technology piece, but when we work through many and multiple problems with password resets, that is a clearly a pattern. When we've spent, I would say, in the last 4 to 5 months, this licensing supervisor, myself, and our IT, trying to pinpoint the reason why we're having difficulty with our customers having to reset their passwords, and we've not resolved it, we've improved it, but resolving it is a different issue altogether. With that being said, status calls about when and how licenses, and you know, I turned in my license application 6 weeks ago, you know, how much longer will it be, that kind of thing, that is a very common phone call. There might be other phone calls with regard to what is the process. So I would say those are three common types of questions that we get with walk-ins and deliveries of applications when people walk in.
Thank you. And one question, Mr. Stone. I think I know the answer to this. Another recommendation I'm reading here says the Board of Teaching should clarify teacher licensure rules and ensure they align with relevant statutes. Which comes first?
Senator Wieger, Senator Dahl, Aaron Doan, Board of Teaching. I don't think there is a which comes first, which is why, as part of the board's legislative platform last year, we had asked for the instruction or permission to be able to work with the revisor's office to do a full recodification of statutes and rules. I think as we've talked about over time, there have been a number of legislative fixes and perhaps even fixes that were applied in rulemaking that made the system complex to a point of a lot of disagreement appearing in both places. So I think we went a long way toward making some of those clarifications in statute this last session, but certainly as we clarify other details, we'll be able to do more in the year ahead.
Representative Liu.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll direct this to Ms. Doan, but if anyone else who has testified would like to offer comment, I'd appreciate it. The tiered licensure has been proposed by, you know, both the OLA, the Board of Teachings put one forward, and I think a lot to think about in here. But I guess the question I have is how much time or has the board given any thought to what kind of standards or requirements you would apply to specifically master teacher or teacher leaders? Those would be sort of new departures from what we have now. I think with the discussion about mentorship and professional development, especially for new teachers, these would be critically important roles to perhaps recognize and designate. But have you given the board given any thought to what you would be requiring for people to demonstrate meeting those licensure qualifications?
Stone.
Senator Uyghur, Representative Loon, yes, the board has given thought to what it means to be a master teacher or what it means to be a teacher leader. I think in terms of have we sketched out specific possible rules or standards or criteria for those things, no. I think that the conversation has still been struggling over the past 5 years as to how to get us to this tiered licensure possibility. And while this probably isn't the pathway one would have chosen to be able to have the tiered licensure discussion, the opportunity is here now. That said, there are multiple states that have added teacher leader or master teacher credentials within the last couple of years and many more that are in process. So there are definitely models to borrow from or to be able to review as a board from those peer groups around us.
Thank you. And I'm wondering if any of the BOSA members would have any comment on that. No one's jumping up, so maybe not.
Okay. Well, they can reserve that opportunity. Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm getting back into the standards, kind of diving down a little bit deeper here. Are the standards, the specific standards, is this more of a transcript issue or other? I'll give you some examples. I know as a former principal, there are states that have broad field majors in the education area, like physical science, social sciences. And when they come to Minnesota in physical sciences, they'd get a license, say, well, you can teach chemistry, but you can't teach physics. Whereas in their previous employment, they could teach both because the standards in their accrediting institution were such that they could in that state. So I'm wondering, as you look at these situations, is it a transcript issue more frequently that you're dealing with when you're talking about standards, or is it something other?
Stone.
Senator Uyghur, Senator Claussen, and I'll reserve a few minutes or opportunity for folks from licensing to answer that question as well. But I think at this point, for broad fields like science, there is the opportunity for a candidate who comes in and their training presents itself as a chemistry training and they're licensed and able to get out into the school under that chemistry mm-hmm. license. There is the opportunity for them to present experience in combination with passing a Minnesota content exam in another field to be able to add another license to their area. So there are avenues within that specific field to clarify or for individuals to meet Minnesota requirements. I think some of the areas where we struggle more deeply are within the special education arena, that certainly prior to having the academic and behavioral strategist license, we struggled with even more deeply. But I think in general, the conversation at the national level at this point is that we do need to set some sort of national understanding in place, even though we all hear about NASDAQ and think that that's what the interstate agreement is. I've probably been in front of you multiple times to say it's actually not quite as simple as that. There is federal legislation that has been introduced at this time to introduce a common application so that states could sign on and say, we are willing to license someone who has met the requirements of the common application, and here's what they would receive, to make that a little more clear. But again, that's just-in-time, right-now information that's happening at the federal level, and we certainly support that work.
Senator Wieger, Senator Claussen, Nels Onser from Department of Education. To follow up with that question in regard to what do we see in regard to transcripts and standards, I wouldn't relate it quite that way with the way that our licensing executives look at the exact, especially out-of-state applicants. When we're thinking about those, Ms. Stone addressed the special education. I would use this for the example I would give as well, and you sort of addressed it when you talked about the science licensure with specific science fields. Throughout the 50 states, there are various measures of how, or various fields of similar licensure. Wisconsin has been brought up. Wisconsin has a cross-categorical license. Minnesota probably used to X amount of years ago. I'm not sure how long ago. But that changed and became specific and field-specific. For example, emotional behavior disorders, learning disabilities, so on and so forth. And when we get applicants from out of state that have a cross-categorical license, those are more difficult to look at. We can't just, if we were, I should say, it's since July of 2015, it has become simplified in the fact that we can at least look at their license, and we have to look at what kind of programming they completed and what their experience has been, which I also believe it speaks to Senator Pratt's concern about, okay, does experience matter? And I would say yes, it does, especially with those people coming from out of state, especially since 2015, when the board's essentially equivalent were taken out of the legislation, as I understand it.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to see if Ms. Stone could put up her slide again for the recommendations for changes in governance. And then I was going to ask if perhaps Chair McKee could join the group at the table and, you know, add a chair, or, but I'd like the three, you know, the department represented, the board of teaching, and BOSA. And then as this recommendation gets teed up again on governance, I wanted to see what does everyone think about it. I like it. And I'd like to, you know, get comments from others as well, but you know, Ms. Sundin, you were very clear. I think six times you said one agency, and we get it. And as Representative Loon pointed out, that this was a change from the Board of Teaching meeting that we had just a week ago, and the department expressed support, as announced by Assistant Commissioner Nguyen. So, you know, we do have a reform recommendation, as pointed out to by the auditor, for one agency with some specific deliverables with the role of the department, but this would be a model. And as you've put this together, maybe you could, you know, react with each other, and then we'll open it up for some additional conversation, with the focus now being on governance. So,
Mr. Chair,
yes, Sundin.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Louise Sundin, BOSA. I just want to, first of all, go back to a question that we were busy saying goodbye to Deb and we didn't hear. So I'm sorry we weren't paying attention. But and that, I think, was some criteria for master teacher. And I think the most obvious criteria would be national board certification. Another criteria that we have is that we do have sets of standards, and we do have specific training for teacher mentors for that would be a part of residency programs and other kind of induction programs. That would be sets of teacher leaders with standards and with specific training. There's one other thought I haven't known what to do with yet, but I'm going to throw it out for your creativity and consideration, and that is we have large groups of educators in our schools that are known by various titles. One is paraprofessionals, used to be. One is education support professionals. One is, I just came from the AFT convention, PSRPs, paraprofessional and school-related personnel. by whatever name, they are critical to our work and critical to the relationship with the kids and with their helping them behave, helping them be educated, helping support special needs children, all those wonderful things. Now, we have had a legislative goal for some time in having some kind of certification, pre-professional certification for those folks. And I'm thinking maybe if we're talking about one profession, then maybe we ought to stretch ourselves, our thinking, just a little further so that we can have the what we used to have, which was the pre-professional skills test, but or something and some certification so that they become a part of the team. Why? For several reasons. One is that they are already committed to education. So we're talking about shortage area. That's where our Grow Our Own programs come from. The second thing is they are a higher percentage of persons of color and persons from underrepresented classes. Also they have experience, and they have experience with the issues of young people, and they also live usually in closer to the neighborhoods that of the schools and the children that that we represent. So I'd like you to help us all think about maybe stretching our definition a little further for this kind of licensing and maybe adding another area to our governance structure. Thank you.
Further comments on the recommendations on the slide here?
Mr. Chair, yes. Members of the committee, I would just say again, Wayne Nguyen from the Department of Education. I think one thing to also really consider is what's the mission of the Department of Education? What would be the mission of the new entity or board that could be created? Is the mission of MDE to be support for pre-K through 12 students, teachers, educators? Is it our mission to develop teachers? Is it our mission to support teachers? And then if that is the mission of MDE, then what's the mission of the Board of Teaching? So that's why it hasn't been as easy to provide you an answer, because I think it's also what's the visions of these two entities that we're trying to kind of delineate.
Mary McBee, BOSA Board. I think it's important to look at the three separate organizations now and look at where they intersect in terms of things that they do in common and things that they don't do in common. And I think working together as a triumvirate, we could decide on those things, you know, because especially for the Board of Teaching and BOSA Board, we both evaluate and approve training programs, certification programs for administrators on our end and for teachers on their end. That could be a combined effort. You know, every 5 years we have to go in and reassess the programs. They have to go in and reassess. Rather than do this separately, that's one thing that we can do together, do the teaching and the administrative licensure evaluation at the same time. So there are many commonalities, but I think we'd have to sit down as a trio to decide, you know, which things we still need to do separately, which things will intersect, and which thing belongs directly to the Minnesota Department of Education. But I think that's a conversation that we should have in terms of how we're going to lay out this change in governance.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That might be an assignment for the next meeting. A question for Ms. Nguyen on the MDE responsibilities for oversight of school districts. To what extent now do you need time to do these three, and do they come in the form of an online report from each school district when we think about compliance and teacher and principal evaluation and the maltreatment? So would you comment on to what extent the department now does that now and how time-consuming and who does it? Thank you.
Ms. Nguyen.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Wayne Nguyen with the Department of Education. The three duties that are actually laid out in these slides are actually done by three different divisions within the Department of Education right now. The compliance and licensure rules would fall with the Division of Educator Licensing. Teacher and principal evaluation falls within our Division of School Support.
And then maltreatment and reporting falls within our division of compliance and monitoring. So there are different divisions, different staff that spend, and I cannot speak to, I don't work as directly with the teacher evaluation and maltreatment area, so I couldn't really tell you how many staff or how much work that is. I do unfortunately know that maltreatment reporting has increased over the last few years, so it has, we've had to increase staffing and increase time to address some of those issues. But again, that's why just really comprehensively looking at what MDE does. I do the things that Ms. Doan laid out here, I think makes sense with the compliance and licensing because of the reporting that comes out to us, and because mostly through the STAR system, we do use it for a lot of different reporting mechanisms and funding streams. It might, that does, I think, in my opinion, make sense to stay with MDE. We use it for federal accountability as well. But again, those are tasks that are kind of done throughout the entire agency.
Thank you.
Ms. Sonda.
Mr. Chair and committee members, or co-chairs and committee members, I'll admit to not having put extensive thought into this, but the teacher and principal evaluation, it seems to me, ought to be rolled into the tiers. And to have it separate, I think, is missing my word of the day, which is opportunity. So if we're talking about how our pre-professionals, our professionals, and are assessed in a much more a process of demonstration of skills, in much more a process of demonstration of and representation of outcomes, and much more collaboratively, it seems to me there's an opportunity here we ought to think about before we all of a sudden jettison that as a separate process. It make to me initially in my head it makes more sense to have that be a part of the flow, a part of the process, and a part of the development of professionals.
Oh. Questions or comments you may have amongst yourselves that you'd like to share. Regarding this proposal, I'm going to be looking at some potential homework that you might want to consider. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I take your comments and Representative Erickson's comments, it sounds like what we really want are these three entities to come together and, based on the OLA recommendations and the testimony we've heard, take a homework assignment to come back with what might that governance structure look like. Is that a fair summary?
That is precise. So, members, I'd like to ask the group, I want to thank each of you and everyone on this beautiful day. No, it's actually pretty comfortable in here.
Nice here.
So not as eager to get outside. But if you could follow up on the model for consolidation that you have here and discuss it, put some more answers to some of the questions that you've posed, how it might be rolled out, the timing of it. If we're looking in for 2017 session, what that might be. I know there's agency budget requests, so that won't be too far off either, but I think you'll see ultimately some bipartisan support on the structure issue. And so if you were to come up with further consolidation recommendations, how that would work, staffing, et cetera, but issues that would need to be reflected. And I would like to see you present that to us at our, and it'll be Representative Erickson's meeting as chair, but I think we're tracking on this that we could consider, the recommendations that you'd have for governance,
I think we have got an excellent start here. And then the follow-up then on that is if y'all are going to be partners, then addressing the recommendations on clarification. We want nothing to be ambiguous or confusing, as pointed out in testimony and the auditor's report, how we get to that. And then the issue of the tiered licensure. There's a number of possibilities, and what we had talked about too for some, you know, paras and others. It's a part of the educational family. As you're looking at the administrators, it's that whole spectrum in education. So on these issues, you as experts, you know, that's what we want. We share a common goal ultimately. So you know, governance and then, you know, the other issues that I just mentioned, if you could develop some of those recommendations and we could consider those at our next meeting, which is scheduled for August 26th or so.
23rd.
Or the 23rd, excuse me, whatever we have on here. And what do you think? Is that, you know, viable?
I'm sure
because we want everyone to buy in. Yes.
I'm not sure a month will give a whole lot of specific details, but I think we can start the conversation and have some initial thoughts to bring back.
And, Mr. Chair, yes. Could I add to that? You know, we're course-based from the perspective of teacher prep programs, so that gets in the way when it comes to our out-of-state applicants. So course-based versus standards-based, can we review that to some extent to see how we can simplify those candidates coming?
Mr. Chair.
Stone.
And Madam Chair. I'm not sure that I fully understand the question. We are not course-based in terms of looking for a particular checklist of courses, and especially since 2015, there are really only four basic criteria that are being looked for when any application comes in. But I think the broader question is, can we re-examine the process by which we take a look at that information? And
yes.
The answer is yes. Yes,
thank
we can.
You. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair and Senator Wigger, I'd also maybe think about performance-based.
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you.
I think that's very important. And then also, Ms. Nguyen, anything that ESSA is telling us, we need to consider. We need to know what it is the feds might be imposing on us, that we could perhaps find a way to waive or work around or at least not make this so cumbersome. Because if they're going to be dictating, that's going to be problematic too. And I think we'd rather avoid that if we can.
Representative Russo.
Thank you, Senator Wigger. To the point about the standards versus courses, this is something we had a conversation about last Friday. One of the difficulties is that the people coming into the system, whether they're looking to do a portfolio or coming from out of state or they've been out of school for some time or whatever the situation is, the standards exist, but how those match up with the courses in each of our different programs is a mystery. And that this is one of the things that leads to the people getting different answers from different people and so on, because they don't understand that every institution has their own means of matching up those standards internally with the courses that they offer. So one of the things we might do is to publicize better the fact that we're standards-based and then provide the information or where to get the information to people coming from the outside so that they can assess for themselves how their own background manages up with any particular program and reduce this perception of, you know, the perception when you get different answers is that either people don't know what they're talking about or that they're they have some other agenda or they're not telling you the truth, you know, you get into this confusion state. So anything we could do to open that up would help.
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, I think that, you know, the preparation programs, MACT needs to be involved in this as well, because it is these candidates who are told, well, you need to call the college. I think Representative Urso is suggesting that, and find out what courses you need to take. And that is causing all sorts of confusion for these candidates who then aren't sure what it is the expectation is to reach whatever it is they're being asked to add to whatever they've earned so far or proceed toward a license. So this is confusing.
Ms. Sun.
Co-chairs, we just, in addition, I think MACT is a great idea. In addition to that, BOSA has a group called the Collaborative, which includes all of the institutions in the state of Minnesota that have administrator licensure programs, and they meet regularly. We chair that meeting so that they have understandings and discussions and within their own group and with us, so hopefully there would be fewer outlier answers and more understanding between and among them.
Excellent idea.
Senator Klassen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the last meeting, I kind of talked about our scope of involvement, and I talked about the teacher assessments that are required in the state. I don't want to lose track of that. I'm not sure that this is the group that we should ask to delve into that, but I don't want to lose the track of that in this discussion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Ms. Stone.
If it would be appropriate, I think that certainly this group would have some recommendations to make about testing. So if that's something that would be welcome, we would be happy to do that as well.
Okay. Representative Erickson, that's fine with you?
Yes, and in regard to that, as we review these websites from other states, maybe there will be an indication of whether the tests are at the front end, the back end, or someplace in between, which I think is also an issue that we've been facing for several years.
Good. Well, we commend you for the preparation for the emerging consensus. There's a lot of work. Is anyone going to be on vacation for the next month?
Evidently not.
Okay. I believe the BOSA director, though, is in Canada right now. But we'll look forward to the recommendations with greater specificity, and then, you know, having them on the chart too for presentation at our next meeting. If we can get a copy prior to that, would be helpful, and then so we can vet that to the general public. For some background, you know, Kevin Baer gave us, from the advisor's office, gave us some references and statute that's pertinent, and he's doing some additional work. There's also the national group called the Education Commission of States. Representative Erickson and I are both Minnesota reps to that, and they would have some potential research. I don't think we need to bring them in at this point. We could probably see what additional information they have on professional educator boards. We're going that direction. Is it 13 or states that we saw in that one organization? Mr. Baer and others are putting some additional information, but I'm thinking for the next meeting, it wouldn't be necessary to bring them in yet, since we seem to be able to figure this out. But we can consult, you know, some of the research that's out there, and we'll ask, you know, we have very talented research around us here at the table from staff, and they can continue looking at what's evolving and what's been some of the best practices in other states. So August 23rd, 1 o'clock, would be our next meeting. And then tentatively, but we could sign off, and we may not need to have four additional meetings, but we have down September 29th. This was based on the doodle that we sent out. September 29th, 9 to noon, Tuesday, October 25th, 1 to 4, Wednesday, November 16th, 9 to noon, and finally Tuesday, the 20th, 1 to 4. It'd be my expectation we'd be done by November, but that's what we have laid out. Representative Yeruso.
Thank you. You don't have a location?
No.
Okay, so that's to be determined?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So that would be the proposed plan. And then for the next meeting as well, we probably would meet in the state office building, but we can meet here, though, if you'd like this better, right? Okay. Right, so we'll most likely meet here. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address us on what we've discussed so far with points? Because I know that you all have a passion about this issue. That's why you're here. You've made recommendations. But do you feel we're on the right course as to where we're going? It's something that you want to point out that you wish you could at this point. I would give you that opportunity before we adjourn. Would anyone like to share any additional thoughts on the process that we've outlined? Okay, but we will provide the opportunity before we adopt any final recommendations for that vetting, and we'll also be posting recommendations on appropriate websites for the general public to be aware. So, members, anything else at this point? Not, and I'd like to thank staff for all their help in the background materials. And there being no further business, the committee's adjourned, the task force adjourned.